Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you so much for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, our weekly roundtable is back. We discuss the latest escalation of tensions between the United States and Iran and the implications for the region and the world. Also, are tariffs the new World War III? China has gone on the defensive against U.S. tariffs and are calling on the nationalist spirit of the Chinese people to overcome the disruption in the economy of China resulting from tariffs imposed by the Trump administration. Meanwhile, 600 U.S. companies have asked Donald Trump to lift the tariffs on China, and farmers in the U.S. are feeling the squeeze. And on the south of the border front, it seems as though Mexico bowed to pressure from the United States and has stepped up its crackdown on migrants, including sending 6,000 of its troops to its southern border. And in the Beltway in Washington, D.C., the battle between the White House and congressional oversight as Donald Trump puts every imaginable roadblock in the way of House committees investigating illegal activity by the Trump administration, including collaboration with Russia in influencing the last presidential election. All of this since the Mueller report. Our panelists are Jackie Goldberg, Dr. Gerald Horn, and Laura Carlson. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. President Donald Trump says if a foreign power offered dirt on his 2020 opponent, he'd be open to accepting it and he'd have no obligation to call in the FBI. Trump spoke to ABC's George Stephanopoulos.
I've seen a lot of things over my life. I don't think in my whole life I've ever called the FBI. In my whole life, you don't call the FBI. You throw somebody out of your office, you do whatever.
Al Gore got a stolen briefing book, he called the FBI.
Well, that's different, a stolen briefing book. This isn't a stolen, this is somebody that said, we have information on your opponent. Oh, let me call the FBI. Give me a break. Life doesn't work that way.
The FBI director says that's what should happen.
The FBI director is wrong.
Several of Trump's Democratic opponents in the 2020 race, including Senators Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Kirsten Gillibrand, and former Representative Beto O'Rourke repeated their calls to begin impeachment hearings in the wake of Trump's latest remarks. Two oil tankers near the strategic Strait of Hormuz were damaged in suspected attacks, forcing the sailors to evacuate. It's the latest mysterious incident involving tankers amid heightened tensions between the U.S. and Iran. The cause of the blast was unclear. One operator said it suspected its ship had been hit by a torpedo. Last month, the U.S. alleged that Iran used mines to attack four oil tankers. Iran denied responsibility. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders called for a 21st century economic bill of rights. In a speech billed as a major address about the historic role of democratic socialism, Sanders called for a right to health care, a quality education, affordable housing, a clean environment, and to a secure retirement. In the speech, Sanders noted that while Trump may criticize democratic socialism, he and his billionaire boosters are the recipients of corporate socialism.
And that is the difference between Donald Trump and me. He believes in corporate socialism for the rich and powerful. I believe in a democratic socialism that works for the working families of this country.
Sanders is the author of legislation to create a Medicare for All system, expand Social Security, and protect pension benefits. The House Intelligence Committee has subpoenaed two former Trump officials who pleaded guilty and special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia probe. Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff said the panel has subpoenaed former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and former campaign deputy Rick Gates. Former White House Communications Director Hope Hicks has agreed to a closed-door interview with the House Judiciary Committee, according to two people familiar with the deal. The interview reportedly will be held June 19th, and a transcript will be released. The House Oversight Committee voted yesterday to hold Attorney General Bill Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross in contempt of Congress for failing to comply with subpoenas for documents related to a decision adding a citizenship question to the 2020 census. The vote of 24 to 15 was largely along party lines. Michigan's Justin Amash was the only Republican to vote with Democrats. Amash has said he supports an impeachment inquiry against President Trump. During debate on the contempt motion, Michigan Democrat Rashida Tlaib said she wants to see a secret memo reportedly written by a Commerce Department official and hand-delivered to an assistant attorney general. The committee says that memo contains critical information about the origins of the citizenship question.
This is very racialized. This is because you don't want communities like mine being represented here in this chamber equally. This is corruption at its core. Well, I'm sorry, I want to see the memo, Mr. Chairman. I have a right to see the memo. My district wants to see the memo. And maybe your districts don't. Maybe not. But majority of our districts want to see the memo. We want to know what this political appointee's true intent was. Is it really about citizenship? No. It's about reducing the number of people of color in this country being counted in the census. That's exactly what it's about. Because you want to cheat. He wants to cheat, Mr. Chairman.
Before the committee vote, President Trump asserted executive privilege over the requested documents. The British Home Secretary says he has signed an extradition order that would send imprisoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the U.S. if British courts approve the extradition. The Trump administration wants to force Assange to face U.S. espionage charges for publishing secret documents hacked from the Pentagon. WikiLeaks exposed evidence of possible U.S. war crimes. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Our weekly roundtable is back after a long hiatus, given our fund drive and the Sojourner Truth team that is increasingly not in studio, but on the ground. And so I'd like to welcome all of them back. Let's welcome back Laura Carlson, director of the Americas Program for the Center for International Policy. Laura is based in Mexico City and a regular contributor to Counterpunch, Fortune, America's Updater, Foreign Policy and Focus, and several Spanish language publications. Laura Carlson is also a television host and commentator on NAFTA, the drug war, immigration, and gender issues for various international news outlets. Laura, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Margaret. It's good to be back.
And Jackie Goldberg, who is now a governing board member of the Los Angeles School Board District 5. She is a former member of the California State Assembly, and she previously served as a member of the Los Angeles City Council. And before being on the council, she served on and was later president of the Los Angeles School Board. Jackie Goldberg, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Jackie, a huge congrats to you. What a win.
Thank you. It was quite something.
Okay. Very lucky. Angelino is very lucky to have you there. And of course, Dr. Gerald Horn, who's the Morris Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston. He's written more than 30 books. Hard to keep up with Dr. Horn's writing, but his most recently published books include White Supremacy Confronted, U.S. Imperialism and Anti-Communism versus the Liberation of Southern Africa, From Rhodes to Mandela, and Jazz and Justice, Racism and the Political Economy of Music. He is also the author of Facing the Rising Sun, African Americans, Japan, and the Rise of Afro-Asian Solidarity, The Apocalypse of Settler Colonialism, The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, and Capitalism in 17th Century North America and the Caribbean. And I could go on. Dr. Horn, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we look forward to you being in Southern California. Our Southern California listeners will have a chance to welcome you, and that's going to be July 20th, and there'll be more information on that coming up. Now, we're going to start off with the tensions which are rising even higher in the Gulf region as the Trump administration lays blame on Iran for the recent attack on two oil tankers, one of the tankers Japanese-owned. Iran is denying the claim and asking why would they attack a Japanese-owned tanker when the prime minister of Japan was on the ground meeting with Iranian leaders. Already, anti-war activists are raising the alarm that this may be a Gulf of Tonkin-type move by the United States, referring to the false incident that was reported back in 1964, which then led to the escalation of the Vietnam War. But the crew and operator of the Japanese-owned tanker has said that the tankers were struck by flying object, not mines. A mine attack was implied, though not explicitly stated by the United States via Pompeo, the Foreign Secretary of State. The U.S. released footage of a video they claim is of an Iranian vessel removing an unexploded mine from one of the tankers. Japan has thus far declined to support the U.S. story. We'll see where that goes. Meanwhile, the Japanese prime minister was in Japan at the time of the attack to carry a message to the Iranian leadership from Donald Trump, including a request from Trump to negotiate. The Prime Minister Abe was told in no uncertain terms that Iran would not consider negotiating with the U.S., given what they are referred to as provocations by the U.S., including the U.S. pulling out of the nuclear agreement. And in May, the United States sent a warship into the region as a warning to Iran, and then a few months ago named the Islamic Revolutionary Guards as a terrorist organization. For its part, Iran has several times now threatened to close the Strait of Hormuz, which is the main waterway for transport for the global oil trade. Let's go now to a clip from CNN about the U.S. response to Iran.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is responsible for the attacks that occurred in the Gulf of Oman today. This assessment is based on intelligence, the weapons used, the level of expertise needed to execute the operation, recent similar Iranian attacks on shipping, and the fact that no proxy group operating in the area has the resources and proficiency to act with such a high degree of sophistication. This is only the latest in a series of attacks instigated by the Islamic Republic of Iran and its surrogates against American and allied interests. And they should be understood in the context of 40 years of unprovoked aggression against freedom-loving nations. On April 22nd, Iran promised the world that it would interrupt the flow of oil through the Strait of Hormuz. It is now working to execute on that promise. Prime Minister Abe made a historic trip to Iran to ask the regime to de-escalate and enter into talks. Iran's supreme leader rejected Prime Minister Abe's diplomacy today by saying he has no response to President Trump and will not answer. The supreme leader's government then insulted Japan by attacking a Japanese oil tanker just outside of Iranian waters, threatening the lives of the entire crew, creating a maritime emergency. Iran's foreign minister today responded to these attacks. He said sardonically, quote, "Suspicious doesn't begin to describe what likely transpired this morning," end of quote. Foreign Minister Zarif may think this is funny, but no one else in the world does. Iran should meet diplomacy with diplomacy, not with terror, bloodshed, and extortion. The United States will defend its forces, interests, and stand with our partners and allies to safeguard global commerce and regional stability. And we call upon all nations threatened by Iran's provocative acts to join us in that endeavor. Thank you.
All righty, and there you heard Mike Pompeo laying it out there. And Jackie Goldberg, I know you have to switch phones very shortly, so I don't know if you would be able to start off with giving your reaction to all this.
Well, you know, it's always interesting to have the United States consider say that somehow or another that somebody else is provocative. I mean, what's provocative? You're following an agreement on the nuclear issue, Iran is, and then we nonetheless get return the sanctions and pull out of it. That's a provocation. We bring a ship into the area, an armed warship into the area. That's a provocation. We begin hyper attacks verbally on Iran. That's a provocation. So for Iran, it must seem like we're ready to attack them, because it certainly seems like to most Americans that we're ready to attack them. That they would want, if they wanted to do to interrupt the Hormuz Strait, they would have bombed ships once they were in the strait. You don't bomb them when they're outside the strait and say that's going to block the Hormuz Strait. So all of this is an attempt, you know, and also in that same Pompeo report, he listed 8 or 9 other things that he said were done by Iran, many of which we know were not. Were absolutely not done by Iran. Some of them by the Taliban, some by other groups, by ISIS, but they were not done by Iran. And so the notion here is it is definitely the Gulf of Tonkin. It is definitely the weapons of mass destruction and yellow, what it was, that yellow something or another that said,
right.
Oh, that's why we have to invade Iraq. The United States wants to do something to its leadership in Washington wants to do something in foreign policy. It always says it's somebody else's fault. And in this case, I do not believe, even though I'm not sure that we should trust any of the players in the Middle East at the moment. They're all engaged in these incredible struggles for hegemony in that area of the world.
Yeah.
This is a time for the United States not to be involved, not to be selling weapons to all sides, not to be making money hand over fist over creating these crises in different parts of the world. And yet the United States continues to do what it does. And with the current president in power, Iran has virtually no way to know what Trump is going to do next, because the Americans don't know what he's going to do next.
Right. Thank you for that, Jackie Goldberg. Very well said there. And Laura Carlson, I mean, a couple of things. One, you've got the Japanese Prime Minister Abe going basically to do Trump's bidding and, you know, being really chided by the supreme leader of Iran, saying, forget about it. You're not even going to be allowed to give the message, right, because we're not even going to listen to that. But also the United States claiming that Iran could be the only player in the region to have attacked these ships because Iran's proxies, and again, they still would lay the blame at Iran, just don't have the expertise or the know-how and how to do it, totally ignoring that there's very well could be many other players in the region that want to set up Iran, basically, and to escalate tensions, particularly when a foreign leader like the Prime Minister of Japan is on the ground. Laura Carlson.
Yes, the timing of it is very suspicious. I don't think that was a joke of the foreign minister. I think many people are thinking that. And unfortunately, because of the panorama it presents to us, the dangerous panorama, I completely agree with Jackie. It's shocking that we're seeing this complete narrative on the part of Pompeo, a categorical assertion that Iran is behind this before there's any evidence. You know, there's this murky video that shows a mine supposedly on the side of a ship that contradicts testimonies by the sailors, as you mentioned in the introduction. And, of course, the United Nations is calling for an investigation. So we don't know what's happening. There's a lot of games going on there. And the situation that's being set up is really very concerning in terms of preparing the American people for a provoked war. And we have seen this before, and we have seen it before when there are contested elections coming up. War is the wild card that somebody plays when they think that they are in a position of possible vulnerability and they don't care about the human cost.
Right. Thank you, Laura Carlson. And Dr. Gerald Horn, I mean, it does seem that even if the U.S. Doesn't in the end make a military move against Iran, certainly Israel might, because they've been edging to do so for quite some time, and I think have only been restrained by, other nations. And so I'm wondering what your take on all of this is, because it does seem that even if the U.S. doesn't go to war, and even though Trump had disciplined to some degree John Bolton, who is very, very hawkish and is ready to bomb anybody, that even the threat of war may be useful for Trump with the presidential elections coming up. Dr. Gerald Horn.
Well, I think you have to understand this latest conflict in the context of what's going on in the neighborhood. That is to say, the key U.S. ally that is Saudi Arabia is bogged down in a failed war in its neighbor Yemen. In fact, the Houthis, who are perceived as an Iranian ally, have been making steady inroads into Saudi territory in recent weeks and months. If you look at the other Iranian ally, Hezbollah in Lebanon, they have now accumulated more missiles today than they had more than a decade ago when they fought Israel to a standstill. And then if you look at Iraq, Iran's immediate neighbor, not least because of the failed war waged by the 43rd U.S. president in 2003, Iraq is now more dependent upon Iran than it has been for centuries, from everything from electricity to security, by the way, against the so-called Islamic State. And then if you look in a bit wider scope, you see that the EU3, which were useful in negotiating the anti-nuclear accord with during the Obama administration, I'm speaking of Germany, France, and Britain, they're trying to develop a so-called special purposes vehicle to circumvent U.S. sanctions that would allow them to compete with Iran and deliver the benefits that Iran thought it would receive after it negotiated this nuclear deal. This comes in the wake of a summit between Russia and China just last week, where they are also trying to circumvent the use of the dollar in order to circumvent sanctions and tariffs that have been imposed on both Russia and China. But I think the wider question for people in the United States to consider is this repetition of the United States continually being dragged into wars, or launching wars, I should say, after candidates run for office pledging not to do so. Mr. Trump ran in 2016 supposedly as a faux anti-war candidate, and yet he is now on the cusp of launching perhaps the mother of all wars. The 44th U.S. president did the same in 2008. Then he launched the disastrous conflict in Libya, which in some ways is worse than the Bush launching of war against Iraq in 2003. I think that that's the larger question that all peace forces and all voters need to consider in the run-up to November 2020.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for that. And we are now also another hotspot happening, of course, what's happening with the tariffs war. I saw a headline somewhere saying that the tariff wars, is it the new World War III? And clearly, Mexico and China are feeling the pinch right now. Mexico, it seemed, was put in a very tough spot there and caved, it seemed. We'll have to see, because it's a 45-day period happening to the demands by the United States that they do their part in cracking down on migrants who pass through Mexico on their way to the United States, and hoping for some measures that are also unpopular in Mexico, but had threatened to slap these tariffs on Mexico. And meanwhile, in China, the United States have been engaged in a trade war through increasing tariffs and other measures for the last few years. And so far, at least $300 billion $1 trillion worth of Chinese imports have been designated for tariffs. And on June 6, Donald Trump said tariffs on China could be raised by another $300 billion if necessary. And the negotiations between Beijing and the Trump administration have really taken a turn for the worse. They basically fell apart with the increase of tariffs on the $200 billion worth of Chinese goods exported to the United States. So I think that the ante is being up. China has gone on the defensive and telling its people that, you know, just prepared for these perhaps a little tough times because of these attacks by the United States. And meanwhile, some people in the United States are feeling the pinch. Consumers are going to be paying more for some popular products, and also farmers who are feeling the pinch also of the tariffs, although Trump lessened the blow a little bit by giving them some money, really a kind of a form of welfare, but a lot of money to help them to tide over. But they're also saying that it's not enough, although some of them are still sticking with Trump and his policies. And meanwhile, over 600 U.S. companies are telling Trump, look, you gotta resolve this. And that includes Target, or Target, as some people like to say, Walmart, and others, saying that they're hurting U.S. business. So we'll have to see how this plays out in the lead up to the election. Let us go actually to just a short clip from the Washington Post as it relates to Mexico, and we'll start with Laura Carlson weighing in after that.
That's the agreement that everybody says they don't have. So, no, because I'm going to let Mexico do the announcement at the right time. From Mexico, they want to go through, but here's the agreement. It's a very simple agreement. This is one page. This is one page of a very long and very good agreement for both Mexico and the United States. Without the tariffs, we would have had nothing. We had nothing 2 weeks ago. Mexico told us absolutely, I don't know where the Times got the story, but I think they got it probably for somebody that worked here and said, oh, how well they would do. Well, for a long time, for many years, people tried to get what we got in a period of a couple of days, and they couldn't get it. That's the difference. They couldn't get it. So Mexico, we're getting along with them great. Marcelo and the president and all of them, we're getting along great. They've started a very strong action. They're moving right now 6,000 soldiers to their southern border. Who ever heard of that? You think we had that 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago, I'll tell you what we had. We had nothing. And the reason we had nothing is because Mexico felt they didn't have to give us anything. I don't blame them. But this is actually ultimately going to be good for Mexico, too. And it's good for the relationship of Mexico with us. So here's your thing. You know, they all say, oh, he does it. I just give you my word. Inside here, and I would love to do it, but you will freeze action it, you will stop it, you will analyze it, every single letter you'll see, but in here is the agreement.
And what's in the agreement?
Okay, there you have it, Laura Carlson, Donald Trump, best friend of Mexico. Just your reaction to this, but also your thoughts on the implications of what Trump is claiming is a success in Mexico in relation to moving forward then with China.
Yeah, well, first of all, this phrase, to do their part to crack down on illegal immigration, we have to put in quotation marks, because the whole premise of this manufactured crisis on the border is not factual. It's not real, and it's another ploy to whip up the issue of immigration in order to galvanize this core racist base of Donald Trump as we move closer to the 2020 election. Mexicans no longer make up the majority. There's a new Pew Center report of those living in the United States illegally. So first of all, you know, they're asking Mexico to do something about refugees and migrants that are not Mexicans. Secondly, the numbers that we're seeing, even with the increase from Central America, are not unprecedented. We've had higher numbers before, and they're not unmanageable. What we're seeing is an increase in women and children who now constitute a third of the refugees and migrants coming up. So what is this secret agreement? Basically, what they got was this agreement to send the military to the border, the southern border of Mexico, something that our organization and all human rights organizations in Mexico are vehemently opposed to, of course, and very disappointed in their government for announcing that. It's not clear exactly what they'll do there, but the idea of militarizing the border has been a program imposed by the U.S. government that responds to its anti-immigrant agenda and not to Mexico's own interests from even before the Trump administration. And then they have this thing that's called the safe third country. And what that means is that any immigrant who's coming up or asylum seeker coming from one country and goes through a country that's presumably safe has to stay there and cannot request asylum in a third country. So for Central Americans who pass through Mexico, which is, of course, the vast majority, they would have to request asylum in Mexico and would actually be barred from requesting asylum in the United States, which is where many of them feel safer for their families, which is where many of them have support networks. And now we know that many of them are fleeing violent life or death situations in the Central American countries. The program that we've already had is called Remain in Mexico, and that's where they request asylum in Mexico, and then they're in the United States, and they still have the right to do that, and they're returned to Mexico. And so the agreement up to now has expanded that. If it goes to this safe third country, the burden on Mexico would be extreme. We'd be talking about thousands and thousands of people. It's not at all clear that Mexico is a safe place for them because many of the same gangs operate in those border towns that they would be virtually stuck in. That kind of an agreement has not worked in the European Union and other places. So this is what he's hailing as a victory. It's a terrible situation actually all round for international law, for human rights, and especially for migrants and refugees. And the fact that he didn't get it in the first round of negotiations, what it indicates, moving toward the tariff interest issue, is that there was a lot more pushback from the Republican Party vocally, I think probably for the first time, standing up publicly against a position of Donald Trump. And we saw the Republican leaders in Congress saying, we're not going there, you know, basically. And there was all this pushback that you're talking about from the business sector with the National Association of Manufacturers coming out. I think that he did not anticipate that. And it's for that reason that he didn't get everything that he wanted there. This relates to what's happening in China as well. He's creating a situation now where on a global level, but particularly importantly on a domestic level, there's organized pushback to the tariffs. The letter that you mentioned of 600 corporations calculates that China tariffs would produce 2 million U.S. jobs lost, 2,000 in costs for the average family of four, and reduce the GDP by 1%. So there's tensions brewing not only in the global trade system, but in domestic politics as a result of this.
Yeah, and Jackie Goldberg, picking up on Laura's last point there, I mean, you have even Walmart telling the Trump administration to focus on how trade helps a broad number of people in the country. And of course, there is the threat of wiping out more than 2 million jobs, as Laura Carlson has said. And also the fact that the G20 summit is coming up June 28th and 29th in Osaka, Japan. And it was there was all kinds of speculation that Donald Trump would be meeting with the Chinese President Xi Jinping at that meeting. But people are also saying, well, you know, Trump isn't really preparing, you know, for this, and expectations are rather low on this. And I wonder your thoughts on this, Jackie Goldberg, and how you think it might perhaps impact the upcoming election, all of this, the presidential race, because Trump's base is still sticking with him. The majority, vast, overwhelming, over 80% of the Republican Party are still sticking with Donald Trump. But we are seeing some cracks happening there. And interestingly enough, there was one poll that had Elizabeth Warren in second place, outpacing Bernie Sanders. That's not generally the case, but at least one poll indicated that. And, you know, you would think her strong issues on some of this may be connected to her rise. Jackie Goldberg.
Well, you know, I think that the important thing to say is that this is Trump's modus operandi. It's the bully. He has done his negotiating, which he continues to tell people how wonderful he is and how terrible they are. He's negotiated his deals for hotels and so forth and so on by bullying people, by telling them that he will destroy them, kill their companies, kill them, not pay them, and so forth. And what he doesn't realize is that China is not a country that is going to deal easily with threats and so forth. I think that the whole notion now of it becoming a campaign in China to resist American aggression around this is going to be very important to the people of China. They do respond to these kinds of patriotic calls. And I think that what he's playing is a very dangerous game with other people's lives, but that's who this man is. He doesn't prepare for anything. He doesn't read any of the briefs. He doesn't take into account the implications of it. He has one modus operandi: squeeze them until they die, and then they'll give in. And by the way, the 6,000 troops to Mexico's border, I understand from people I know who've been working this issue in Mexico that there were 5,400 troops at the border already. And so that what he got was about 600 new troops to go there. So what we're really talking about is the attempt of the president to use bullying tactics, to use threats, to make it clear to the world that the United States is going to tell everybody what to do about everything. The big problem for Trump is that the folks most likely to be hurt first are his base. And even though they are giving away, you know, welfare checks to all of the farmers and a lot of the other folks, it's not covering it. And the one thing that you have to know about farmers is that they're not very fond of handouts. They'd much rather be farming and selling their stuff. And here's the big problem for farmers. So let's say you get a check as a handout, but you lose your market. So let's just take soybeans. Soybean contracts are very important to a bunch of Midwestern farmers. Those contracts are now no longer being renegotiated with the recipients of their soybeans all over the world. And in fact, Southeast Asian countries that can grow soybeans are taking those contracts away. Once those contracts are gone, they are gone. The United States farmers will not get them back. And since they won't get them back, that means that either the United States government will pay soybean farmers forever, which we're not going to do, or they're absolutely going to have to either change crops or be devastated by the policies of Trump. That will have an impact on his vote, I assure you. Now, let me say one more thing about the elections. I do think that it is very likely that Warren will continue to rise because she is seen as a person who is asking and answering real questions about the United States economy and about the United States' role in the world. And I don't know if people have gone to her site, but if you haven't, you should. Her policy papers on things are really enticing, and I think that they will hold a lot of sway with an awful lot of the American public. So I'm not surprised she's gaining in the polls.
Yeah, we'll see here. We're going to be starting our presidential election watch very soon here on Sojourner Truth, including having our weekly panelists, roundtable panelists, weighing. Now, Dr. Gerald Horn, on this, we see, you know, the G20 summit coming up. India is also making some moves. They're saying that they're going to levy higher tariffs on U.S. goods, including almonds, walnuts, and apples. next week. They had delayed it by about a year. But of course, Mike Pompeo is due to visit India, even though a date has not been set. But you can bet that there'll be some negotiating going on there. And Modi, who is more in the ilk of Trump, right? We'll see how all of this plays out. But also, China is starting to call out Mike Pompeo in an unusual move. They actually said that Pompeo, and named him, was telling lies, right? So China clearly is indicating that it will not buckle in the face of these threats, although clearly with the attack on Huawei and the fight over 5G, who's going to control 5G, because apparently the Chinese technology is ahead of the United States on this, and that's also very much behind all of this. So, Dr. Horn, your take on all of this?
Well, first of all, with regard to these tariffs against China, it's also having negative effects in Southern California. There's already been a slowdown at the Long Beach, Los Angeles port, which, of course, is the major port of entry for Chinese exports into the United States, which will probably cause the bosses to lay off more longshore workers. Second of all, it's apparent that Mr. Trump has no strategy towards China. If he did, he would seek to enlist countries like India and Japan and Mexico and Germany into a sort of Cold War front against China. Instead, he's threatening sanctions against all of those nations. And then with regard to these protests in Hong Kong, a city in which I used to reside, it's striking that Hong Kong is now shaping up as to be the Berlin of this new Cold War. Just like during the Cold War, there was a split between socialist East Berlin and non-socialist West Berlin, and it was a flashpoint that almost led to war between East and West a number of times, and that is a very sad situation to contemplate as another massive demonstration is contemplated for Hong Kong within the next 24 to 48 hours. Now, it's apparent that some Democratic candidates are on the right track with regard to Central American migration when they suggest that the U.S. approach should be organizing development for Guatemala, for Honduras, for El Salvador in particular. But instead of doing that, what Mr. Trump is trying to do is turn Mexico into a kind of a North American Palestinian Authority. That is to say, just like Israel tries to use the Palestinian Authority as a hammer against Palestinians, Mr. Trump is trying to use Mexico as a hammer against other Central Americans. I should also say that the United States is very upset with the new left-wing regime in Mexico City because they feel that this regime has not been sufficiently hostile towards Venezuela. And I think that this pressure on Mexico in some ways is a response to this U.S. upset with AMLO, the Mexico president, and his reluctance to enlist in the anti-Maduro crusade.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Horn. On that note, we're going to take a rather late and short station break. And when we return on the domestic front, the battle for the future of democracy as it's practiced in the United States, who's going to discipline the White House, if anybody? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We gonna be all right.
All right, Kendrick Lamar. All right, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And breaking news, an update on that event on Haiti. Congresswoman Maxine Waters will be attending that event along with Danny Glover. This is breaking news. We just found out about it. So Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who recently headed a delegation to Haiti, she will be at the event starting at 10 o'clock at McCarty Memorial Christian Church. Please go to the KPFK website to get more information. But again, breaking news, Congresswoman Maxine Waters will be there and speaking, and everybody will be answering questions. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. It's our weekly roundtable, and we're going to quickly go back to our weekly roundtable. We want to thank our Facebook and website, people who go to our website, and also our SoundCloud listeners in across the United States and worldwide. But we want to quickly get back to our weekly roundtable. Our panelists are Laura Carlson, Jackie Goldberg, and Dr. Gerald Horn. And now, what the heck is going on in Washington, D.C.? A fight about what the U.S. Constitution really meant about checks and balances, and leaving a lot of people with their heads scratching because Donald Trump is just doing whatever he likes. And the U.S. Congress, the House, doesn't seem thus far in a position to do much to stop it. Let's just go to a brief clip now of Donald Trump challenging part of the Mueller report.
No special counsel should have ever been appointed. You know why? Because there was no crime. They had no evidence of crime.
He lays out a lot of evidence, including the episode where you ask your White House counsel, Don McGahn, you tell him Mueller has to go. You call him twice and say, Mueller has to go. Call me when it's done.
Okay, now the story on that very simply. Number one, I was never going to fire Mueller. I never suggested firing Mueller. I don't care what he says. It doesn't matter. That was to show everyone what a good counsel he was.
But why would Don McGahn
himself look like a good lawyer? Or he believed it because I would constantly tell anybody that would listen, including you, including the media, that Robert Mueller was conflicted. Robert Mueller had a total conflict of interest. I didn't say that.
If you answer these questions to me now, why not answer them to Robert Mueller under oath?
Because they were looking to get us for lies, for slight misstatements. I looked at what happened to people, and it was very unfair. Very, very unfair. Very unfair. I gave them 1.5 million pages of documents, right? I gave them 400 or 500 witnesses. I let Don McGahn testify. I let him tell. He was the White House counsel. I let him
testify.
I knew he was going to testify.
An interview. You didn't answer questions on obstruction.
No, wait a minute. I did answer questions. I answered them in writing.
Not on obstruction.
I don't know about those. I don't know. I answered a lot of questions. They gave me questions. I answered them in writing.
Not on obstruction.
Look, George, you're being a little wise guy, okay? Which is, you know, typical for you. Just so you understand. Very simple. It's very simple. There was no crime. There was no collusion.
Typical Trump. Can't resist insulting somebody, little George, right? We're going to start with you here, Laura Carlson, because in addition to Trump recently saying that it's fine to take opposition material from a foreign government against a candidate that you're running against. And of course, this was what was said about the last presidential election and that famous meeting in Trump Tower with Trump's son, basically saying, oh, I love it in terms of getting opposite material information that would harm Hillary Clinton in this election. And now you have Donald Trump saying, yeah, that's fine. What's wrong with that? Right. Of course, you should take it. And then on Wednesday, June 12th, the U.S. House Oversight Committee voted to hold two top Trump officials in contempt of Congress, Attorney General William Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and Representative Justin Amash of Michigan are charged with failing to comply with subpoenas for documents related to a decision about adding a citizenship question to the 2020 census. But that's just one example, because person after person after person has just said no to the House of Representatives. We're not coming. Laura Carlson.
Yeah, so we have in just these last few days, you know, a number of incidents that the issues may seem dissimilar, but they all come up to the same message. Donald Trump is not only acting as though he were above the law, he's actively against the law. And all these rules that have been built up to refine democracy, to close loopholes for corruption and for abuse of power, are being trampled on a daily basis. What are the four? We have the recommendation to censor or fire, actually, Kellyanne Conway for violating the Hatch Act by actively promoting candidates as a public servant. We have the citizenship issue, which is very, very important in terms of the future of democracy and having an accurate reflection of who's in the country and who can vote, as the clip at the beginning of the show demonstrated. We have the Mueller investigation, and we have this statement that taking foreign gifts is absolutely fine. Using foreign information against candidates is absolutely fine. So, yeah, this is just serious. And these are just the ones in the last few days, because there's been a series during his entire presidency to say, I don't care about the rules. In fact, I'm going to set the rules from now on. And this is just completely actively destroying, as I say, many, many years of grassroots pressures, of legislative work, of expert testimony to try to create rules that work for protecting democracy. So this could have long-term structural effects on our democracy, as well as preparing people, a certain part of the population, to begin to believe that that's okay.
Yeah.
And to sacrifice many of the values that have traditionally protected democracy.
Thank you, Laura Carlson. Now, Jackie Goldberg, by the way, I want to make a correction here. It was actually Representative Justin Amash of Michigan was the only Republican to support the Democratic effort in relation to Barr and Wilbur Ross. And earlier this week, a resolution was approved by the House, which allows committee chairs to sue Trump administration officials to force compliance with congressional subpoenas without a vote of the full House. So, Jackie Goldberg, it seems as though we're dealing with either King Trump or Dictator Trump. And meanwhile, there's a lot of wavering and waffling on impeachment or not to impeach. Your thoughts here?
Well, you know, I think any government teacher will tell you that this is not exactly what the founding fathers of our country intended. They truly intended three branches of government that had the same power each of the other in order to prevent a king from reappearing on the scene. And they mostly wanted to make sure that both the judiciary and the congressional Congress had tools to prevent a president from behaving like a king. So now we know that Congress so far has not willing to do that, that only that partisan politics have overridden their desire to make sure that democracy continues alive and well in the United States. So that's a big problem. That's a huge problem. Now we have to say we have to rely on the courts. And what Trump is relying on is that he's packed the courts with people he believes will behave just like the Republicans in Congress, which is to say they will put party ahead of country. That if that happens, if we in fact cannot get relief from the courts to tell the Trump administration, no, nobody's above the law, not even the President of the United States. If the courts continue to behave like Republicans and not like jurists, then this country is in very deep doo-doo about what will happen going forward, and whether or not we will retain our ability to be a democracy, or whether the oligarchy will have finally captured all of the government of the United States for its personal benefit.
Right. And Dr. Horn, I mean, a lot of us are, you know, some of us are asking, what democracy? Because we know that the United States has been working towards a democracy and it has not yet been achieved. But it seems as though right now a backward step is being taken here. And you could really watch the disintegration, it seems to me, of U.S. style democracy with this farce that's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. Just thoughts from you.
Well, part of the farce that's going on is this remarkable comment by the 45th U.S. president that he would accept assistance from an unnamed foreign power in terms of fighting this election in November 2020. This is even more remarkable in light of the fact is when you consider all the lives that were destroyed over the decades. So think of Paul Robeson, whose career was wrecked because supposedly he was in league with a foreign power in Moscow. Ditto for W.E.B. Du Bois, who was put on trial in 1950-51 for the same reason. And yet, there has not been sufficient comment, I think, with regard to Mr. Trump making this notion in terms of this interview with George Stephanopoulos, even though just the other day or just this morning, he contradicted himself and tried to walk back that statement.
Right. And on that note, I'm afraid we are going to have to leave it there. But Dr. Gerald Horn, so very true. You have the United States running around the world, you know, touting its democracy, but yet you have its legislative bodies not being able to rein in a president who said before he was elected that he could stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and he would still be elected. And now he's open for business, because any country now knows that they could literally go and buy Donald Trump by collecting dirt on the Democrats. So we'll see how all of that plays out. But another fascinating roundtable, and thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thank you. All righty. This is Margaret Prescott. We are out of time. I'd like to thank our Sojourner Truth team, Mr. T. Teddy Robinson, assistant producer Romero Funes, and of course, all of our panelists, Dr. Gerald Horn, Laura Carlson, and Jackie Goldberg. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. Go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. I hope to see many of you, many of our Southern California listeners. That is on Saturday, June 15th, 10 o'clock at McCarty Memorial Christian Church. Come welcome Danny Glover to Southern California and hear Maxine Waters, Pierre Lavoisier, give an update. Haiti has always stood for Black liberation, and today, yet again, tens of thousands of them are on the street. They're being shot down. They're being massacred. They need our help. We all owe a great debt to Haiti. I hope you get to do something really nice this weekend. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.